Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders. Listen as they identify factors that drive innovation and measure significant business results. Be inspired and influenced by their insights and outcomes. Hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC.
Well, welcome to Significant Business Results Radio. I'm your host, Fran McNeil, and joining me in the studio is a dear friend. We went to Princeton together almost, well, a while ago. And my guest tonight is Anatoly. Anatoly has a pediatric practice in New York. Welcome, Anatoly. How are you this evening?
Excellent, and thank you very much for having me on the show.
My pleasure, my pleasure. We were talking before the show started about how you got involved, sort of made a decision to get into pediatrics. And while I often ask entrepreneurs, you know, what put you on the path of entrepreneurship, because you are involved in medical practice, I was hoping that you'd share with the audience, sort of take them through the key points of you choosing to start a pediatric practice.
Well, my mother started it, and when I saw mm-hmm. how hard she was working, I almost rebelled and decided not to ever become a doctor, much less a pediatrician. But what happened on the way to that decision is I thought I wanted to do chemistry. I thought I wanted to do research. I did 2 summers of research, and that wasn't exactly right. So I decided to become a pre-med, but definitely not into pediatrics. I did my pre-med. I got into medical school, and then I started doing rotations. And internal medicine, nope. Surgery, nope. Everything else, everything except pediatrics just did not feel right. Pediatrics felt right. So who am I to rebel against something that I actually like? And that's what I went into, and I've never looked back.
Never looked back. Tell us about, I mean, on your website, you have a very powerful story of your mother's journey to starting the business. Can you share that with the audience? Because I think it really is relevant, particularly now that you've just shared that moment of rebellion.
There are 3 A's that a good pediatrician must have, pretty much any good doctor. One A is ability, basically being able to do things, knowing your stuff, knowing what to do in all situations, being fully trained. Second A is affability or amiability, having people not repelled by your manners, having people trust you based on how you present yourself. And 3, possibly the most important, is availability, being there, being available to them when they need you. And my mother hit all 3 perfectly. She had been chief resident at Kings County Medical Center, Downstate University. She was recruited to go in as the head of intensive care unit, but she turned that down to go into practice, and she actually worked harder in her own practice than she would have in the intensive care unit. But she was always there, and she always had a smile for people.
And I see that that is an essential value that you continue in the practice today. Share with people where they can find you on the web, and then, you know, how availability is a big component of your practice, of the practice.
Well, first of all, you can find us on the web at babydr.us. That's babydr.us. We have 2 offices, one in Brooklyn and one in Staten Island. The areas that we're in, English is the 4th most commonly spoken language. So the availability is, first of all, geographic. We are where people need us. We are where children are. Most people walk to our office. It's not hidden away in a strip mall. It's not in the middle of a business district. It's where people are. Secondly is temporal, time-wise availability. We're open 365 days a year. Now, we broke that during the Sandy flood. We were actually closed for an entire 2 days after having 4 feet of water above our floor line. We had mud 4 feet up our walls after Sandy rolled through. So we're available to people geographically. We're available to them when they need us. We're available to them under the insurances that they might have. We take pretty much everything. There's maybe it's easier to list things we don't accept than insurances that we do accept. We're not an expensive practice. And we get our work done. We get people in, we get them diagnosed, treated, reassured, taught what to do, and on their way home, which is where they should be in the first place.
I want to go back for a moment. Your website name, in a lot of ways, says it all. It's babydr, so babydoctor.us. And that for a pediatric practice, that totally makes sense. And on your website, on the director's page, you talk a little bit about, it's really a skit. And some people often brag about, well, my doctor's good because they're not available or it takes a whole lot of time to get them. And instead, again, you focus on availability and you've got pediatricians who are board certified so that you can make that availability. And I like the one line on the website, which is, we have no clairvoyance on staff. What we do have is a fully accredited laboratory and the latest non-radiologic diagnostic equipment to help with early diagnosis. So that element of really wanting to make sure that folks get home where they need to be is wonderful. And you're really a leader in a lot of ways. And so I'd like for you to share with the audience, because you and I had talked about it prior to the interview, how literally in research, one of the areas that you decided you did not want to do, you actually ended up being on the front end of the curve and doing some best practices as it related to swine flu. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, with swine flu, it was kind of interesting. It appeared in April of 2009. And by April 27th, we had cases plural every day. I think on the 27th of or the 28th of April, I was blogging that we were having more than 10 positive flu tests every day. Now, what ended up happening with us is our patients could come in on a moment's notice if they had a fever. The first thing we would do is we would test them for flu, and if they had flu, we would give them Tamiflu because that's all we had. It turned out, and it very happily turned out, that A, the test was fairly sensitive in diagnosing flu, if not the first day, then the second day of fever, and B, oseltamivir was a medication that was extremely effective against this particular strain when given any time before the third day. So we actually were able to take care of people very quickly. They were in and out within half an hour. They were taking their medication within another half an hour, depending on how fast the pharmacy could get it ready. And they were absolutely fine in another 24 hours. We had one hospitalization out of maybe 1,000 cases of swine flu that went through our office during that first wave. And this was while the health department and the CDC were saying that they don't have enough information to recommend either way on the use of either the rapid flu test or the medication. And we kept saying, guys, it works really well. It becomes a very mild disease if you treat it properly. In fact, I was on Fox News back then, and they said, well, it's a really mild disease. And I was wrong. It's a mild disease if treated properly. If left to its own devices, it is not mild at all. But I was seeing mild cases because every case we saw, we jumped on very quickly and we treated very quickly and they got better very quickly.
Mm. So really a testament to the three A's, ability, availability, and that trust factor, which you called affability or amiability, in terms of your patients saying, I'm not feeling well, and coming in right away and knowing, having the confidence that they'd be seen right away and that you give them the best treatment possible. That practice literally led you to being on TV and people asking to hear more about you. Do you currently speak in addition to being the medical director?
Very occasionally. I do occasionally get invited to speak on a subject, not as much as back in 2009 when the epidemic was going on, because we did have something very unique. We had a an approach to treating swine flu that was quick, effective, and very, very easy to implement by people who wanted to. And I do believe that quite a number of people ended up following our lead very quickly. And it certainly wasn't the lead of the CDC, and it wasn't the lead of the health department, because they were a little bit behind the ball in that.
Mm-hmm. What is happening in pediatric care now in 2016 that might not have been happening in 2009, or maybe another way of putting it is, how has technology influenced how you practice? And does that impact the affability and amiability factor?
Well, I think the big way technology has impacted us is the medical information technology that we're now very much computerized. This is a coin with two sides. On one hand, the ability to retrieve information is excellent. It's very quick to find information if you know what you're looking for. On the other hand, looking through a chart is a much longer process than it used to be, and inputting information is a much longer process than it used to be. And I was in the emergency room recently with a family member for a fairly trivial problem, and we were there for 6 hours because most of the time of the staff in the hospital was spent at computer terminals trying to chart something. And patient, face-to-face patient time was a very small fraction of the time that they were spending looking at their terminals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's,
wow.
Until the growth curve of the professional learning curve of the use of medical information gets to the point where we can be as quick with electronic charts as we were with paper charts, I'm afraid people will not be well served by it for quite a while, I think.
Wow. You're making a really good point, and I'm wondering, you know, this show is really geared towards entrepreneurs. To what degree do finished medical school now start their own practices or take over or work within a family practice and then eventually end up running that practice? What are some of the trends in terms of physicians and entrepreneurship?
Well, sadly, the trend is away from that. Every year, the bigger and bigger percentage of newly graduated doctors are going into salaried jobs, not their own practices, not practices with a view toward partnership, but the salary forever route. And it's kind of unfortunate.
What impact does that have on patient care? And I'll go back to what you stated earlier, the three A's.
Well, ideally and hopefully it shouldn't. ideally and hopefully administrators would treat the doctors right and treat the patients right and treat all the rest of the staff fine so that everybody would be walking around with smiles on their faces. Much of the time, that does not happen. I'm hoping it's going to happen more and more, but much of the time, it does not happen that way.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as availability, availability, most salaried places aren't available all this time. There are certainly enough after-hours clinics, which tends to fragment the care a little bit. Now, with electronic medical records, it's not as big a deal because then the doctors on call during the day would have access to records generated during the off hours. But still.
So what does that mean for an organization like yours that has two locations, 7 certified physicians, and is focused on babies, pediatrics, excellent care? In fact, I saw you're a center of excellence. What does that mean for your business growing and or maintaining the standard that you've established?
Well, again, growth for us means something very different than it would mean for a store or a manufacturer or a franchise operation. Growth to us means bringing in the resources to be able to help the people who are coming in for the first time today the same way as we've been helping people who've been coming in all along. So they wouldn't be shortchanged compared to the way we were doing things earlier. About the Center of Excellence, that's a separate story in itself. That goes back about 20 years when we didn't know we were a Center of Excellence. We just did our job, as always. And I got a call from one of the insurance companies, one of the first HMOs that we dealt with. And their question was, what are we doing with our asthmatics? And I said, well, we're treating them. What are we supposed to be doing with our asthmatics? Turns out they kept track of everybody's asthma admissions, and we had 2 years running with no asthma admissions out of 500 covered lives, which was apparently to them quite unusual. It wasn't unusual to us. To us, that's the way we did it. But we ended up reverse engineering what are we doing right about it, and made that into kind of an informal protocol as to how we treat asthma, and it works very well. And after us, over the past 20 years, other organizations started coming up with their protocols, which tended to be very similar to ours.
Some of them were better, so
we adopted them.
Ah, I love it. I love it. That, again, the power of information exchange. Over the years, I am sure there are lots and lots of stories of clients and customers and mothers and children that are just totally thankful for the care that you've given. For our listeners, what are one or two stories that, you know, when you sit in your medical director seat and then on Sunday when you're on call and in the office, what are some client stories that just stick out and in your mind as really significant because that family was truly appreciative of the care that you provided?
Well, you know, usually when a family is very appreciative, it's because something very dramatic happened. And if we do our job right, it never gets to the dramatic stage. It's always nipped in the bud when it doesn't look like much of anything. I do know of one entity that should be very grateful, except I don't know who they are and they don't know anything about me, and that's a daycare. I had a family bring in a child in tears, and they wanted me to call the police because the child was covered in bruises. And about 90 seconds later, We were calling not the police but an ambulance to transport them to the hospital for urgent treatment because they had an illness that made them unable to clot their blood. So the bruises were not, in fact, traumatic bruises, but they were pathological bruises. Now, child's all better. Child's absolutely fine. In fact, I don't think she's a child anymore for quite a few years. She's an adult. So that worked out well. But I think the daycare center that didn't get raided by police looking for child abusers really at that point had reason to be grateful if they knew that this had happened, which they didn't because everything was handled without involving them in any way. But that child had had come directly from the daycare center to our office. And you can imagine the mess it would have been if the police were contacted first and how the daycare personnel would have been treated by the time the medical diagnosis came down that it's not their fault.
Right. Wow. Nipping it in the bud. There are probably some important analogies to you as a physician taking care of things before they're really urgent. And again, running a business. What are maybe not advice, but what are practices that you follow to really make sure that your business runs well, your staff is happy, your customers are happy, and that the reputation that your mother started continues to be where you want it to be?
Well, hopefully just doing the job and not prioritizing the revenue over actually getting things done and doing the right things the right way at the right time. Revenue is important. I don't think anybody will tell you that revenue is not important. But if you are getting it through shortchanging the customer, that's not going to be a long-term revenue.
So although they don't teach business in medical school, clearly just from your interactions with the community and the patients, that totally makes sense. What's a favorite quote for you?
Well, first of all, the answer to the question about learning the business, they taught both of us to think at Princeton. Now, both of us went into Princeton knowing how to think, and then we got better at it, and then we got better at it over the years after we graduated. But I think just that ability to focus, to cone in on the important, and to really ask yourself, what do I need to do here to achieve the result I want? I think at least a good part of that came from Princeton. As far as my favorite quote, I don't know who said it, but it is never too late to have a happy childhood.
Ooh, how appropriate. Wow.
Yes.
So even at 50 plus, that's possible?
Yes. Yes.
Well, one of the things that I know that you do, you actually started in Princeton, and you now, as you shared with me before the interview, you do for your personal enjoyment, is you write science fiction.
Correct.
Tell the audience why. Like, how does that work? You're taking care of kids, you're a medical director. Where does science fiction fit in, and why is it kind of part of your secret sauce?
Well, ask any writer about writing, and they will tell you they do it because they have to. There's just no choice. You have stuff that wants to be written, and it's writing itself, and you're along for the ride. And if you can get something out of it, fine. I have sold, I think, close to 40 or just over 40 stories. I also translate from Russian. Russian is my chronologically first language, but as far as ability to use it, I think it's fallen to second now. It is something I do because I have to, and there are people who read it also because they have to or they want to. There's a web page that is loldoc.net, loldoc.net, where links to my work are collected. They're in different magazines. They're podcast by a number of different podcasts. They've also been in Nature magazine, which is usually a science magazine, but the last page is always a science fiction story. And they've actually bought four of my stories so far. And it's something I write because I have to, but I enjoy having written, and I enjoy things, seeing my work in print and hearing its podcast.
Yeah, pretty, pretty cool. Well, Anatoly, we are almost out of time, and I do want to thank you for being a guest on the show. I'd love for you to say and spell your last name slowly so that people can write it down, and then again, let people know where they can find you on the web.
Well, it's Anatoly Belilovsky, Belilovsky, and on the web, it's babydr.us, babydr.us. And if they feel like reading some science fiction, it's at loldoc.net.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure hearing from you, and just I'm so excited. It's kind of cool after so many years to see where you have gone and the accomplishments that you've made and the contributions literally to people's families and to people's lives. I look forward to seeing you at reunions next year.
Absolutely.
The audience may not know, but we, you know, like many colleges and universities, get together around graduation time. And again, I want to encourage folks, if they are in the New York City area, specifically Brooklyn and Staten Island, and they're looking for a great pediatric center, Belilovsky Pediatrics is a great one to check out. I am a little biased, but I will admit my bias. And you can learn more about the organization at babydr, so babydoctor.com, correct?
.us.
.us, excuse me, babydoctor.us. And if you want to see more of Anatoly's science fiction writing, you can check him out at loldoc.net. So, Anatoly, thank you again for joining us.
Friend, thank you so much. The pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. And folks, continue to listen. We always have interesting guests, a variety of topics. And as you heard tonight, entrepreneurship can be seen and experienced in a number of ways. Anatoly talked about the three A's, and I thought they were really significant. And I wanted to repeat them: ability, affability, and availability. What are you doing as an entrepreneur to stand up and be counted under the three A's? Join us next time as we continue to hear significant stories from significant entrepreneurs.
Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders, hosted by Fran McNeil, president of Significant Business Results, LLC. Follow Significant Business Results Radio on blogtalkradio.com/significant business results.
Thanks.
Hello.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Anatoly?
Yes.
Okay. They're going to cut us off because I have it set for 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So have a great evening. And
you
should be able to hear the recording in a little while. Okay?
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Very
again.
Much appreciated. Okay. Thank you. Thanks.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Bye-bye.